It's been some morning at Rugby World Cup 2023. This, of course, the week building up to the grand final between the Springboks and the All Blacks in Paris on Saturday. Breaking news out of Paris this morning. Firstly, that hooker Bongi Mbonambi has been cleared of allegations of a racial slur levelled against England flank Tom Curry in the semi-final last weekend. That is great news for the Springboks, with Bongi Mbonambi included in the match day 23 for the final. That was the second story breaking this morning, the actual team announcement of the box for the game. And shocking, with a 7-1 bench split for that game. Some rumours in the week that it might happen, but again, I don't think too many of us would have predicted it possible. Rolling the dice on some level, and I'm joined in our Cape Town studios once again by Herman Mostert. Morning, Herman.
Morning, Lloyd. Quite surprising, I must say, with the 7-1 split. Sort of expected maybe changes to happen at halfback with Hundra and Faf coming in, but then while I was actually busy reading that team, and I suddenly realized that all the action is actually on the bench. All the talk is actually on the bench.
Thank you so much to the listeners again for joining us on the Inside Pass, your daily dedicated Rugby World Cup podcast. And we are excited, as I'm sure you are, for the weekend. Let's start, Herman, with the Bongi Mbonambi news and get that out of the way. It's been a difficult few days for Bok Rugby, I'm sure for Bongi himself, since the semi-final where that news broke of Tom Curry alleging that he had been the victim of a racist slur from Bongi Mbonambi. It got quite bizarre after that, because it was then revealed that this was also part of an allegation that dated back to a test match in 2022 on the end of year tour. World Rugby, of course, confirmed a couple of days ago that they were formally reviewing the accusation. And there was a bit of uncertainty circling over Bongi, which obviously for the box was crucial, because he is the only recognized first specialist hooker in the squad. So losing him for the final would have been catastrophic, to say the least. He now has been cleared. The official word from World Rugby on Wednesday morning, Thursday morning rather, having considered all of the available evidence, including match footage, audio, and evidence from both teams, the governing body has determined that there is insufficient evidence at this time to proceed with charges, World Rugby's statement read, adding, therefore, the matter is deemed closed unless additional evidence comes to light. We've been checking in with Kaniso Traku all week, Herman, and you know, it didn't seem to impact Bongi too much at training. I guess when you know you're innocent, you know you're innocent, and you know, it looked like he had the support of his teammates and everyone around him, and seemed to be in pretty good spirits all week. But I mean, this is just great news for the box. Probably would have helped if it had come a bit earlier in the week. But nonetheless, Bongi can now go ahead. The players, the team, management can all proceed with clear minds and now focus on the rugby.
Yeah, I think it was, for them, it was probably not as worrying as it was for some of the other players. You could see Bongi was very chirpy during the training sessions very early in the week already. So I think Rusty and Jock have probably, you know, shielded the team a little bit away from that whole media circus that obviously ensued afterwards. You know, the box have been very mum during their press conferences as well. They've been very strategic as to who they put up for pressers. And, you know, there were a few heated moments with a few English journos persistently asking questions about that, where so much to a point where the BOC media liaison person had to step in and tell them, listen, no more questions on that. But I think, like World Rugby said, you know, probably insufficient evidence. You know, there's a lot of things that happen in the heat of the moment of a very physical sport, and geez, I'm sure there's a lot worse things that have been said in the past as well that was not investigated. So, yeah, I think happy we can just move on now. England obviously don't seem very happy. As you'd RFU just released a statement where they're saying that they're deeply disappointed in what has ensued. Obviously, Tom Curry and his family has now been targeted on social media for some abuse, which obviously don't want to see. But luckily we can focus on the rugby now, because it's been a pity that that's the biggest game for us in 28 years has been overshadowed a bit by that news the whole week. So it's Thursday now, so there's still two days build up to the final. Let's focus on that then.
Yeah, we can certainly move on. And just as the as a fixture alone, it's as big as it gets, like you say. Potentially the biggest game of Bok rugby in 28 years. I mean, the 2019 final was huge as well, given where that team came from. But the fact that this one is against the All Blacks and that it's only the second time that these two sides have met in the final of a Rugby World Cup makes it huge. The fact that this is the end of Jacques Nienaber's tenure as Bok coach. We don't know what Siya Kolisi's future holds either, but you know, this could be maybe the end of the road for Sia, maybe on the international stage, almost certainly at a Rugby World Cup will be his last one if he gets a win here. Just what does that do for his legacy? He goes down as one of the great test captains of all time. Let's get into that starting 23. Like we said, the big news was that the Bucks have gone for a 7-1 bench split, which, you know, is rolling the dice. You can't get away from that when you factor in that they've got one scrum half in their match day 23, four scrum halves at the World Cup and the 33 man squad, and one scrum half in the match day 23 for the final. Let's, in case you've missed it, talk you through the starting 15. From fullback to loosehead prop, we have Damian Willemse, Kirtley Orenser, Jesse Creel, Damian Dialendi, Cheslin Colby, Andre Pollard, Faf de Klerk, Dwayne Vermeulen, Peter Steph de Toy, Siya Kolisi, captain, Franco Mostert, Eben Etzebeth, Francois Haber, Bongiem Bonambi, Stephen Kitsoff. And then your bench, the talking point, Dion Faree, Ox and Chair, Trevor and Yakane, Jean Klein, Erger Steyman, Kwaka Smith, Jasper Visa. And the only backline player on the bench is Willie LaRue. Now, obviously, a few talking points to go through, but let's start with the obvious one. And yes, it's incredibly tough on Marnie Lebok, who got the box this far. He's actually up for Newcomer of the Year at the World Rugby Awards, which take place the day after the final, which shows you what a good season Marnie Lebok's had. You know, when Andre Pollard was out injured, Lebok, you know, really steering the box through that pool stage of the win over Scotland and got them this far, started the semi-final, and now in the game that matters most, he finds himself out of the match day 23 completely. But rain is expected on the weekend. Goal kicking in a final is everything. No surprises to see a fit Andre Pollard backed.
Yeah, look, obviously he came on after half an hour on Saturday. I think in hindsight, they probably realised that they picked the wrong team to play England in the semis, especially given the conditions. They knew it was going to be rainy, and now it seems like for this Saturday, there's even more rain predicted than there was last week. So I fully expected them to pick Faf at scrum half ahead of Reiner. He's tactically a bit better tactical kicker, and then obviously Pollard is perfect for those type of conditions, and obviously he's got that BMT when kicking to goal. I mean, he's looked flawless off the tee and the chances that he's gotten in this World Cup, so yeah, it's hard on Marnie. Played really well, but I mean, given the like this team, they've said, you know, there was a game earlier in the tournament where Dwayne Vermeulen also didn't make the match day squad, you know. So Jasper Visser was very unlucky to miss the last two matches.
Yeah.
Not even being on the bench, you know. So sacrifices that these guys need to make, and Lebok's not the only player that has had to have made these sacrifices, and I'm sure it would have been communicated to him in that way. I mean, like you said, he's been nominated for the Breakthrough Player of the Year award, so there's a nice incentive possibly for him on Sunday as well. And hopefully also, obviously, all these guys will get a winner's medal if the Bucks win the tournament. So it's a team, it's not an individual sport, and it's a team game, and the Bucks have stressed very they've been very pertinent in saying that this is a team thing. It's not about the individuals, yeah. And I'm sure they will buy into that.
They've all got their roles to play, you know. I mean, it's not just what happens in the 80 minutes on the field either. I mean, these guys are a unit that go on this journey together. I remember very clearly, if you think about Elton Yankees at the 2019 World Cup, you know, obviously firmly behind André Pollard in the pecking order at that tournament, but did play the games against the Minnows. You know, where he was backed and did the job, but was also so important at training in terms of setting up the opposition lines and, you know, setting up training kind of drills and backline plays for Pollard to play against. And he was considered crucial to preparing the box for the final against England that year, which I found very, very interesting. You know, Elton would go home and study and, you know, study opposition backlines and fly halves. So it certainly isn't down to the guys who do the job on the day. There's a whole lot that goes into it. And Marnie Lubbock, given his contribution to Bok rugby this international season, would be fully deserving of a winner's medal, you know, should it come his way. Yeah, Faf de Klerk is back in for Kobus Reinach. The other thing that strikes me about this team is how much do these Oaks back Willie LaRue? I mean, you know, he's the only guy on the bench. You'd rather have Willie LaRue on your bench than have a specialist scrum half, which I think says a lot about how highly Rassie and Jacques rate Willie LaRue. Because, you know, Kobus Reinach on the bench could have done a job elsewhere, you know, outside of scrum half. He could have done a job on the wing, you know, as well. Willie, I suppose, can cover 10 and he can cover 15.
And winger, maybe.
And maybe a bit of wing. Yeah. But it's just the risk of not having a specialist scrum off. I mean, if Faf does go down early in this game, hopefully that doesn't happen, obviously. But if something had to happen and you have to play the bulk of a game without a specialist nine, because you've backed a utility backline player like Willie LaRue, I think it says a lot about how highly they rate him.
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, if that happens, then Cheslin Kolbe is probably going to be the guy that has to play scrum off. So let's hope Faf doesn't break down after 10 minutes and then Cheslin needs to play. Cheslin has played there, I think, for 10 odd minutes before in games. I think it was a match against France last year where he actually stepped in. But, you know, that it's going to be a different ask if he has to do that for 70 minutes in the World Cup final against Aaron Smith, you know, very experienced scrum off for New Zealand. But I think Cheslin is, you know, Cheslin's the perfect size for a scrum half, you know. Like, remember there were calls a few years back from Nick Mallett saying that Cheslin needs to actually switch to scrum half if he wants to have a future in the international rugby. I actually agreed with Mallett at the time because Cheslin is the perfect build for a scrum half. And yeah, so
not one of Nick's better calls, given that Cheslin Kolbe went on to become the best player in the world.
Yeah, even though he had a point, but yeah, that Cheslin is the guy that sort of likes to prove people wrong. But, look, Willie, a bit of an enigma. You know, he's obviously a senior member in that team. And this will be his 93rd cap if he comes on on Saturday. So, the Bok coaches have stressed always that Willie is the guy that, you know, he's the great try assister in the team. You know, when the try gets scored, he's often, the ball's obviously gone through his hands.
Yeah.
And, maybe later in the game, we're going to need someone at the back to spark something. And maybe he's the guy that can come on and do that. Obviously, I think the All Blacks are going to, especially given the conditions, they're going to target our back three with kicks. We haven't got, if you take Damien away, in Curtly Orange and Cheslin, we don't have the two tallest wings. So you would expect the All Blacks to probably target that area. I think they should back. I mean, Damien is quite solid. He's been good this tournament, and I think he's quite solid under the high ball. Expect Willie to make an impact, and hopefully it's a positive impact.
Yeah. If you're All Black coach Ian Foster, and this morning you see this Bok team come out, what's your first reaction?
Jeez, probably, they're trying to replicate how they thrashed us in at Twickenham a few weeks ago, 6 weeks or 2 months ago. What was it, 35-7 the score there?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the biggest defeat the All Blacks had ever suffered in any game. So they're probably saying, listen, we're in for that again, you know, in for a physical barrage, and these guys are going to try and smash us up front.
Yeah.
And the weather conditions is perfect for that. For them to do that. But the thing is, I'm sure the All Blacks would have done some soul searching after that match, because it was embarrassing for them to lose by that margin against the Bok. And
yeah.
I'm sure they would have plans in place to counter that. And yeah, look, I'm just a bit worried. Like, I see some of the people also commenting on our stories that we've published this morning, saying that they're a bit worried that maybe there's not a plan B for the Boks in this game, considering that they've gone all in with the 7-1 bench split. They've basically played their card and cards, and they've shown this is what they're going to do. But then knowing Rassie and Jock, they could always have some tricks up their sleeve. So we never know. There's still some playmakers in that back line. We must just hope that no one gets injured early in the game, I think, then, because otherwise you could have a scenario where Quagga Smith would have to play on the wing or the center even. So I think it's a like, I like the team. I like the 7-1 split, because if we're going to play in that weather and the way we can play, and if we're going to try and do that, then the 7-1 split makes sense, bar the fact that if there is an injury, then you could get into trouble. So let's hope it doesn't happen. But I mean, you, like I said, I've said before, you can't cover every single base everywhere. You know, you've got to give somewhere. And they've no doubt got the team to win on Saturday, that's for sure.
It's so interesting here you saying, I like the 7-1 split. It makes a lot of sense. And if you cast your mind back to that Twickenham game, which was the first time that the Boks did field a 7-1 split, that was almost an accident, because there was the injury, I think, to Willie LaRue, before the game. And Quagga replaced him, and suddenly the Boks had a 7-1 split, and it was like, oh, 7-1, look at that. And then that turned out the way it did. Then they picked 7-1 against Ireland, which kind of shocked the World Cup again, because this time it was very much intentional. But even then, there was the sense of, you know, this isn't a do-or-die game in the pool. They should still be okay because they've already beaten Scotland. This is a bit experimental. Could it be Rassie mind games? That kind of thing. I didn't expect 7-1 again after the Ireland game at this tournament. Once you hit it into playoffs, I mean, 5-3 in the quarterfinals, 5-3 in the semifinals, and 6-2 seemed the safe kind of bet here for me. For the final. So 7-1 really out of the blue. Sim Abanisa wrote a beautiful piece yesterday that went live, I think, last night or this morning on our site, where he pointed at the Rassie innovations that he's had just at this World Cup alone. You know, 7-1, obviously the main kind of innovation that we've seen from Rassie in the Boks. Has it worked? Well, South Africa lost the Ireland game.
Well, they lost that game because they missed 11 points at goal.
Not because of the 7-1 bench split. Fair point there. And they've gone for it again now. But the other innovations included the robot lights that we've seen from Rassie in the press box, even down to his Twitter behavior, where he's been following the team he's playing against every week and then unfollowing them once they've played them. So
I'm not sure he's done that for New Zealand, though.
I don't think so. He did it for England, he did it for Scotland. He's also written about the four scrum halves in a match day 23 that the Boks had in one of their games.
No, there's only one.
He's written about a 1.88 meter fly half replacing a 1.89 meter hooker. Obviously, Andre Pollard coming in to the Boks squad when Malcolm Marks was injured, which also took everyone off guard. So throughout the competition, there's just been these out-of-the-box calls from Rassie and Jacques, which I guess really is going to be a hallmark of their legacy when they're done.
Yeah, it's like you don't know if it's like I keep wanting to say that the Boks don't know what their best team is, because they keep changing the team every week. But now you can also look at it from that side, that they're actually strategically picking the team to who their opposition is. You know, they're reacting to what they think is going to be in front of them. So they're very innovative in that way. But yeah, like definitely, no pun intended, but out of the box thinking is a good slogan for those two coaches. You just don't know what to expect. You know, they can just, who knows, maybe like in 2019, they were criticized for playing a very boring style of play, especially in that semi-final against Wales. And then they came out in that final and they tried to run it from everywhere early on in that game, and they actually surprised England. It was actually England did really well actually not to concede tries early in that game, because the Boks surprised them. And I think that rattled England a little bit in that game. They were obviously favorites for that. So who knows, maybe, I probably don't see them doing that, but maybe they're going to try and run it a little bit early on Saturday, even if it's raining. You know, you just don't know what they're going to do. Like you've seen in the tournament, they'll try to set up a line out inside the opposition 22, and then all of a sudden they throw it a bit deeper, or they throw it a bit short, and then just quickly move it around, like not go the traditional mall route, you know, and then just quickly pop it up for someone else to try and take the contact somewhere else. So they keep up coming up with little nuances, little things here that keep surprising and keeps you on your toes, I guess. And I'm pretty sure the All Blacks are probably thinking today, look, do we really know what's coming or not?
Yeah. Never mind the fact that we've seen them marking in their own 22 and going and opting for a scrum to win a penalty and gain some territory. The other little tweak to the team is Vincent Koch has a niggle and Trevor Nyakane comes in for him. But that's just, for me, a showing of the incredible depth that exists in this Bok team. I mean, if you lose a player of the caliber of Vincent Koch, I can replace him with Trevor Nyakane. Yeah. I think that says a lot about where you are. And then obviously Jasper Visser is the extra forward along with John Klein. Yeah. Those two coming to really firm up that bench from a physical point of view. So if it was going to be a 7-1 split, it was always going to be those two guys for me. So no real surprises there. Like I say, the surprise for me is that if it was going to be 7-1, I would have gone for a scrum half. Was Grant Williams the one against Ireland? Who was the one against Ireland? Can you remember? Because that was, you know.
I think it was Williams or Reinach, one of the two.
It was a scrum half, I think. You know, they certainly had scrum half cover in that game. How do you play this? I mean, is Peter Steftetoy, we said this last time they did it, but is he the one guy in that pack you see staying on and playing the full 80?
Probably. I think he's a guy with probably the most stamina of that forward pack. You know, a lot of the guys like Sia goes off quickly. Eben also goes off relatively quickly, like even before the 60-minute mark. So Peter Steff, I can't see Dwayne going that long. I mean, obviously Jasper, you'd expect him to come on. So I think Peter Steff is the guy. But the thing is, they could have easily gone 6-2 on the bench and then, you know, then maybe not pick John Klein, and then you could have picked an extra backline reserve, scrum off maybe. But that would have, you know, if one of your locks go down, or you don't want both those locks to play for a full 80 minutes, then Peter Steff could have moved to lock and you could have brought someone else on. But it's obviously not going to be that way now. So, but just looking at this pack of forwards, barring any injuries, I think Peter Steff is the guy that's going to have to go to full 80 and possibly even 100 minutes, you know, if there's extra time.
Mm. Let's talk about Eben. He's such a big player. I mean, was huge in the quarterfinal and, you know, maybe less impactful in the semifinal, but, you know, it's just such a big player for the Bok every time he plays. And he has been nominated for World Rugby Player of the Year. I mean, such a prestigious honor that, and really, you know, I think solidifies your status as a grace of the game when you win that award. He's up alongside Bandiaki from Ireland, who's just been brilliant. And I mean, even in that quarterfinal that they lost, you know, you really felt for him more than anyone in that field, given how well he's been playing. And so Dupont, who's always there, and Ardie Sevier of New Zealand. I mean, nice to see Eben, you know, compared to those great players.
Yeah, I think it's going to probably be, depending on who wins this final, if New Zealand win, Ardie Sevier will probably win that award, and if South Africa win, I think Eben will win it. So, but it would be fully deserved for whoever wins it. Like you said, I think Bandiaki, he's been superb. You know, even in a losing course for Ireland in that quarterfinal against New Zealand, he was probably Ireland's best player. There's definitely their standout player. I think they would go the route of whoever wins will win, whatever team wins will win, that player will win that award. And then obviously on the coaching side, it's the same with
Jock
Nienaber has also been nominated for Coach of the Year. And Ian Foster is obviously in the mix as well there. So,
yeah,
a lot riding on this final.
So Ian Foster's build up to the World Cup, I mean, you know, surely has to count against him. I mean, the All Blacks were...
He's already been fired. He could win the World Cup.
No matter what happens, you're out.
It's going to be a bit like Jake White could go out winning the World Cup and then not continue as coach.
It's obviously Jacques Nienaber's last game as Bok coach as well. He's off to Ireland after this. Talk a bit about his contribution to Bok rugby. You know, over the last 6 years with Rassie, but actually South African rugby, his contribution to South African rugby dates back a lot longer than that. I mean, one of those kind of almost an unsung hero of South African rugby. Yes, now he's front and center and he's head coach, but was always the guy, and even now some would argue still the guy, even though he's the head coach, almost operating behind the scenes with Rassie pulling the strings. But I mean, Jacques heading back to Ireland after this and investing his time and, you know, intellectual property into their system has to be considered a loss for Bok rugby, regardless of what happens on the weekend.
Yeah, look, he's been everywhere where Rassie's been, he's been, you know. Obviously, he is a physiotherapist by trade, and that's how he sort of got into it. I think he was the Free State, they met when Rassie was at Free State, and he appointed him once he started coaching Free State as their defense guru. Before that, he was obviously a physiotherapist, and then when Rassie came to the Stormers, he brought Jock along, and, you know, you'll recall about a decade or so ago when Rassie was the director of rugby here and Alistair Coetzee was the Stormers coach, the Stormers were renowned for a team that defended really well. They had the best defensive system in world rugby at that moment. Their attack wasn't that good, actually, but they finished top of the Super Rugby standings one year. Couldn't go all the way, as they lost in the playoffs, but they had a really good team. And sort of the unsung hero behind that team was Jacques Nienaber, who was the defense coach.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people knew about him, actually, or spoke about him. He was never put up for media obligations or anything like that. And then obviously when Rassie got to the Bok, when Rassie went to Munster, and I think Jacques followed him there as well.
Yeah.
And then obviously they were reunited with the Springboks. So they've always been together, toe to toe. There is this perception, obviously, that Rassie is the guy pulling the shots, but Jacques knows his role and he fits into that role quite comfortably. We saw on Saturday against England, it looked like Rassie was just shouting all the instructions from the top. Jacques looked like the calm one in the Bok there. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a combination that helps. Jacques brings a bit of calmness to that. So it's going to be interesting to see him go on his own now to Leinster with Rassie staying behind. I still wouldn't be surprised if they get reunited very soon somewhere in the future as well. Again, you know, so because they work together so well and they're obviously big friends, the two. So, yeah, but I mean, Jacques, I don't think it bothers him that people, you know, think that Rassie's the guy pulling the shots. I think he knows where he fits into that whole setup, and I think he's confident with that.
Yeah. If history's taught us anything in Bok rugby, is that wherever Jacques is or wherever Rassie is, the other one is not too far away. They have followed each other around. We are just two sleeps away from just such a big game, the final of Rugby World Cup 2023, the Springboks against their old rivals, the All Blacks, and we'll continue building up to that game tomorrow and into the weekend. Thank you very much for joining us. Start building up, start getting your weekends planned, head to the shops, get the braais going, and just stay tuned to News 24 and we'll be bringing you everything coming out of the Bok camp between now and then. Once again, this has been the Inside Pass. Enjoy the rest of your day. Cheers. You are the one.